Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is September 7th, 2005. This session, a community forum, send in the clowns, meet Holden's new directors, Paul and Carol Lund Hinderly and Tom Alstrom, presented in the Fireside Room, disc number FO-2005-31.
Also on the Mississippi, so we had to deal with four federal agencies, including the Environmental Protection Agency and the Corps of Engineers, the Department of Transportation, because we were on the Great River Road, and one other, I can't remember now. Anyway, Department of Interior. So even anytime you're an entity, Holden Village, Stockholm, Wisconsin, you have to be in compliance, and Holden has to be in compliance with what the Forest Service has seen fit, or the Forest Service is trying to raise money too. I mean, looking at it from their point of view, their budgets are being cut, they're trying to find some money, and user fees are a very good way, just like gasoline tax. The more gas you buy, the more tax you have to pay. That's a user fee that's hidden from most people.
At the same time, though, Holden Village has an extremely good relationship with the Forest Service, and we are kind of a poster child for good relationships for being good stewards of Forest Service of land, of public land, as well as maintain roads. There are some exchanges that are possible in this piece, in small part, because we do maintain roads. So we are, the Forest Service is glad we're here, but at the same time, as Paul said, they need to raise money too. So this is all just part of the legislative and diplomatic process. But in the future, you may be asked for some advocacy with your congresspeople, senators, etc. I don't know that it's quite the time yet for that, but that may happen.
Yeah.
But I think all this also relates to our theme of send in the clowns.
Does that relate to the current administration?
No, I think what I was thinking was that Holden Village is such a it's a crazy thing, you know. I think it's an example of the foolishness of God that we have this unbelievable place here in the middle of the Cascade Mountains. It's almost impossible to get to, and yet look at how many thousands of people come in and out all the time. It's a miracle in a way. And when I was thinking about the passage, the foolishness of God is greater than the, how does that go here?
Yeah.
The foolishness of God is greater than the wisdom of humankind. And when I've heard sermons on that, it's usually sort of the idea that even foolishness of God is greater than the wisdom of humankind. But I don't think that's what is meant. I think it is more that the foolishness is greater than wisdom. You know, foolishness is greater than wisdom. And we have this, we have this message that needs to be proclaimed into us all the time that it is this we are redeemed by this newness, this wind of miracle that is beyond our understanding. And so maintaining the gift of Holden is something that is not necessarily just a matter of step-by-step linear wisdom. So this also is where I see the fool in all this. And I know our friend John August Swanson, whose artwork you may be familiar with. He's half Swedish and half Mexican, and he just creates these unbelievably colorful, intricate pictures that just celebrate creation. But John has this wonderful sense of the fool, who is sent into the world, who is Jesus, who is the breath of fresh life that comes in. And so when I think of the clown, sending the clowns, sending the fool, I think of John and I think of the whole creation that is renewed with the color of the Holy Spirit.
Can you think of what it says on that pulpit? Anybody remember what it says? We have this treasure in earthen vessels. How foolish is that? Why don't you put your money in a bank that doesn't even lock? It's the same kind of silliness. Well, you must have more questions for us.
Do you have ideas for holding hilarity?
Ideas for holding
money. Well, we're
saving money.
We when the pastors are here, we'll probably put back our nightclub act. But when the pastors come, of course, they're real fools for Christ, and they've been waiting to get away from their congregations for a while and see their colleagues again. So years ago, the three of us did a nightclub act in the lift that went on for went on all night long, because I don't think any of those pastors ever slept. I'm not sure. It's a little bit like a sorority frat party. But a lot of it for us this year, everything from movies for the winter community, everything from the great screwball comedies of the 30s to Life of the Imagination of our own reviews and... I don't know if any of you, in 1973, we put on the Watermelon Review a couple of times, and that was sort of a semi-spoof on Watergate, but it was terrific success, and we ended up having to put it on when Congressman Al Quie came up, and he joined in. You know, here was a Republican congressman, you think, oh dear. You know, we're putting on something that pokes fun at Richard Nixon, who's the president. And Albert Quie got up and sang in the chorus. It was very liberating for us to realize that clowns can do things that I don't think that any confrontation with Al Quie would have been very productive, and in the end, it wouldn't have been welcoming. Part of being hospitable means you know, and St. Paul uses that word, xenophilia, he uses it. Xenophobic is what we think of. And Paul uses the word, you know, be a xenophiliac, you know, love strangers. Well, loving strangers in the first century was just as dangerous as loving strangers is in the 21st century. It's pretty risky, but boy, the joys are, you know, outweigh any risks. But that's something that only clowns can do. And one of the things that the intercessory prayer, one of the women yesterday, she works in the kitchen, prayed for were all the street performers in New Orleans who are out of work. And I hadn't thought, I mean, of course, I didn't think about the cooks, but she prayed for all the street performers, all the mimes, all the palm readers, all the you know, the people who do the, you know, the quick sketch artists, things like that. You know, all those people who, you know, come up to you with really nothing, you know, between you, and when you think about that, that's a terribly risky position to be in, and that's sort of what a clown is in.
So I think the thing too, I mean, the idea with hilarity, you know, is that it's not something you could ever manufacture. It's kind of not kind of like, oh, it's time for us to be silly, or now we're going to be hilarious or something. I mean, there is a lightness of being that comes when you understand that it's not up to you, you know, not only your salvation, you're giving up, you know, trying to be a better person. That's not going to happen in my case. So I can, you know, you obtain this lightness as a gift, you know, that really can't be controlled. And that's what I think hilarity is. It's kind of a rambunctious, almost out of control kind of thing. And who knows where it's going? It's going to pop up wherever, you know, wherever someone senses that liberation that comes from the knowledge of Jesus Christ, hilarity is going to follow.
I did dish team with you guys on Monday morning, and it was hilarious. To hear this bantering back and forth.
It sounds to me like it will come forward, because I think there's a history behind the street entertainers that they come forward in desperate times, or in dangerous times, or in troubled times. And so hilarity comes forth. It's a kind of salvation of its own.
That desperateness, I didn't realize. We talked about Send in the Clowns. I read up a little bit on Steven Spielberg, who wrote that song, you know, Send in the Clowns, and I've never really understood that much about that song from Little Night Music. But that, and this is going to be in the article too, but that's what the ringmaster yells when somebody's fallen off the high wire. There's a catastrophe, you know, and so the ringmaster calls to the side, you know, send in the clowns, you know, not to divert attention, although that's what happens in real life, is, but really to create something new out of the catastrophe that this earth is. And what you think about God's desperate act in the cross? I mean, you know, I think we kind of take that for granted when it's the greatest. You call that time? It was the greatest, you know, greatest show on earth. I mean, it was goodness. I mean, it's just so mind-boggling, and that's why, for me, going back to St. Paul, it was just mind-boggling for him. He didn't think it worked. You know, And it doesn't work. It's just wacko. I'm glad to be part of it.
You've worked together for 25 years.
Yeah.
And you learned a lot about where your particular gifts take you. Will there be some carryover of your previous responsibilities and how you address the next years of the village? Or is that going to evolve?
Are you wondering if Paul's going to cook?
I'd love to have him. I never made it to the Harbor View, so this is...
Well, so a lot of it's going to evolve. It's in a whole new world here. In a restaurant where we worked for 25 years, I was always in the back. People always wondered why I wasn't the kind of chef who came out in front, and was I shy or something? I was just usually too dirty, you know, to come out in front. And, you cooked that food? No. I think that here, I think a lot of it will evolve. And we've been really slow when folks have said, well, are you going to take the lead on fundraising, Tom or Carol or Paul? And we said, oh, you know, we're going to... Don't pin us down on that yet. But obviously, we are going to have to come up with some. Tom is still going to have to, and Carol are still going to have to do an awful lot of schmoozing, especially when the power goes out in the middle of February for 2 days. You know.
And I agree with Paul. I think that it's not like we're entering Holden with this big agenda of. How do I want to put it? This is what needs to be done. It's not that. I think there's a listening to what, to the constituency, to the residents of the village, long, short-term staff, all that kind of thing. As I said before, I think that, you know, I don't know how it will happen. I think as long as we are focused on the mission statement of the place, the renewal of the church in the world. You know, I think we tend to see whatever we choose to do through that, because that's what matters, you know, at the end of the day.
I have to say that I have never felt so much, let me see. I never felt so much that every part of, I mean, we come in as a kind of a team because we've worked together for so long, but we also come in as individuals. And I've never felt so much that I had to leave all my expectations behind as I do now, including my own self, my definition of who I am. whatever talents, abilities, disabilities that I bring, I know will be fully used, including the disabilities, since we have to believe in a God whose strength is made perfect in our weakness. But I feel that in this situation, everything is just going to be used and probably reconstituted. I mean, in some other form, I don't know. But when we talk about the coming into this, we're a different, a little bit different shape than the old leadership, as all new leadership is. And I mean, there are three of us, there are two of them, you know, that, and I would imagine that there is some concern on the part of people who are here long term. We haven't heard that, but still, I mean, this is a change. And so in our unwillingness to commit too quickly to who's going to do what, I'm sure there might be a little bit of anxiety, but I feel a lot of trust that will work out. And yes, we will evolve. Jen, what do you think?
Since 1962, when Jerry and I were first here, I put to Holden for the courageous, growing, changing edge of the church. When you talk about church renewal, it's really been active in our lives. And I have, of course, experienced disappointment as we've tried to take ideas home to our congregation. Now, Tom, you mentioned this, relationships with specific congregations. And there are so many models of things that could work well for congregations and communities, but the congregation is a community, you know, and probably not for all of them, but it could be adapted. And I was just thinking of the worship resources. We have Marty Hogan. We adore Holden Vespers and, you know, the services at our church, but do people really know what that means, how that grew out of this community, you know, the creative calm of that experience. And that brings me to the whole community of artists that's nurtured here, you know, long-term or short-term, as people come into contact. Why aren't the arts celebrated more in our congregations? Mm-hmm. Thirdly, listening to those teachers talk about the possibilities for the staff to mentor elementary and secondary children in their choice of electives.
Yeah.
Well, sure. Well, why can't we do that in congregations?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody wants to do creative writing in the confirmation class. Well, why not? You know,
right.
An hour That's a week, really cool. 2 hours a week.
That
was great. I think too. I think Holden has suffered when it hasn't used its imagination, or when especially when the arts and literature haven't been emphasized. One of the things I can tell the barometer of Holden when we were here. I was here for 4 winters. And I came up with this idea at that point that even in prisons, they have reading groups because they have to, their imaginations have to be free.
Mm-hmm.
And when Holden, when the winter village wasn't reading, it wasn't devouring literature. it would start feeding on itself or each other. I mean, you can't help that happening. Not that everybody's got to read the same book, although I think that's really important.
Mm-hmm.
Not that everybody has to be in drawing classes or in ceramics, but unless the real life of the mind is and spirit is fed, and this is especially true for those of us who've been up here during the winter, because it can get awfully gray, and the days are, as you probably know, are short, and Tom and I were up here 1 year, early 74, when a group of kids came from Millikan University and they were in the choir. But they got up here 2 days later, there were avalanches, and we didn't dig out until 2 days before they left. And they spent a lot of their days digging. It was before we had snow plows, so we had to do it all by hand. Just with shovels. And but the music we had in the evenings was so great. And the in the kitchen, we'd do whatever we could to feed those people who were coming back cold and wet. You know. But so even at desperate times, Karen was talking about, even in desperate times, maybe that's when it's called forth, but Holden is so much healthier when the mind and spirit are fed. And I don't want to go off too much just on fiction, but it's just so lovely to be able to escape even to to London. London in wartime or something.
Matt Kocher on that? Lovely.
It is. And it's lovely to escape with other people, you know, who are all, you know, part of the same.
One of the things you were saying, the communicational thing, I was sharing with some of you earlier just an idea of how the finances of the village have shifted over the years. In the 60s, in the 70s, 90% of the operating budget came from individual congregations, members of congregations, and those congregations which chose to support the village monthly, or maybe with a check once a year, it's 10% now. Mm-hmm. Now, what that says to me is that some things were thematic. That connection with the individual congregation, I mean, I hope that those of you who can will write us and say, you know, we want you to come out to Frostbite Falls, Minnesota, you know, or wherever it may be, and talk to our congregation about Holden. Because the thing about Holden that always was so exciting was to be able to walk into a group of people and ask them, how many of these people know you own a retreat center?
In the mountains.
In the mountains. You know, because you do. Well, you own it. It's yours. Come and take advantage of it. And to work with congregations about those ways that you mentioned, how can we, just to give you an example, I went to this session at Calvin College, it was on music, and there had been a couple sessions on music from the Caribbean, Latin American, Hispanic music, this kind of thing. And this one guy from a small congregation got up and said, I don't think we're going to be doing a lot of Caribbean music at First St. John's in, you know, wherever, some small town. What have you got for the small congregation? And I thought that was such a great question. Now, what is the outreach? I think that's something that we'll be looking at a lot. The danger always for Holden is that Holden becomes this place in the mountains that's going to tell you how you should live. That's the real danger. This is what you ought to think about GLBT issues. We do, you should too. This is what we think about the ecology. If you think like us, if you don't, you're wrong. This is what we think about world peace. And if you don't think like us, you really need to think that over again. You know, like, people are going to get in a boat and come up here for that? Not me. You know, but if you want to have a place where there is a lively conversation on that issue, where people can say, I don't agree with you, you know, and can in a safe environment exchange ideas rather than being told, then you've got the sky's the limit.
I think that was what about Holden changed me when I was a young person coming out here. Was just that sense that there could be conversation and controversy that was lively and intense and sometimes very heated, and yet at the end of the day we worshiped together and forgave each other, and you know there were tears at the parting, you know, and that is always my image of the best thing about Holden.
Yeah, I care least to say nothing was too outrageous to be brought up. You know, the gospel is already so outrageous that, you know, everything is
is under that mercy.
I was just affirming the idea of how can this Holden community guests and staff be nurtured as a community of conversation. And in the years we've been involved, a big hindrance to that has been the individualization of video in rooms where parties are going on at different video. And so it's just a dream, how can that be where there's a book that's the center, where there's like a book or literature that's the center, and the whole community is talking.
It's part of it, right?
Both summer and summer and winter, and there's something else I should say about that, but I forgot.
Well, that was a huge change from, I know we were up here in the winter of 84 and we were up here later, but when we came back up in 95 in the winter, and that was, there'd been this video revolution, and we hadn't even thought about it, of course. Before that, we'd have rent movies and have a 16 millimeter, you'd watch movies as a community, and they would be movies that would, often be classics. It isn't worth, there's no reason to just get the latest flick from, there wasn't anyway a video store, so you couldn't buy the latest flick from a video store whether you wanted it or not. But the budget for that, for the winter, used to be about $1,800. It was a lot of money we would spend so that the winter community could be, in a discussion about movies. And there were people even that, the generation prior to us, or two generations prior to us, who, thought movies were sinful, that wasn't something you did. And I remember there was, the treasurer of the board was from Lutheran Bible Institute. He was always a little concerned about that movie budget. What's that for?
The other thinking of that we've been aware of this last week or two, that the conversation that goes on because of the teaching staff back here, the working staff really isn't part of that, and I think that's something that's changed over the years. I would just value that the guests and the working staff, and it's hard when they work all day and they're tired, but there's got to be some creative idea.
Well, I wish today, I was thinking, today we had been, the whole village should have just taken a holiday this afternoon, just listened to these two great poets, and I was talking to Diane about it a little bit afterwards, and I just felt badly for the people, especially the staff, for this is their salary. Again and again, that used to be drummed into us, and Janet said, with Gertrude, now since Gertrude Lunnell has died, she used to say it, but that used to, at every staff meeting, but that used to be a huge, just the ongoing program at Holden for the staff is your salary. This is why you're here. Yes, it's to hike and to be a part of, but it's also just this explosion that's going to happen in your mind. The number of people who've come up on staff and who have gone back because of encounters with the teaching staff and because of the program, who've gone back just into wild career changes that have been wonderful for them, and we know a bunch of them, and they keep coming up. But you're right. I think that's something that Holden loses really quickly. Because the staff changes much more quickly than any of us can imagine. 3 weeks ago, or 2 weeks ago, I was here 2 weeks ago for Hydro Day, and I spoke at Hydro Day. Who here was here for Hydro Day? One, two, three, four, five. Right. That's ancient history. And all those staff who were here for Hydro Day who left, they're part of the Holden community through space and time, but Holden changes so quickly. So you think about a college which changes every year, but Holden, it's a month is. Someone who's here in June, it's ancient history now.
Somebody said the other day, a tradition of Holden, something we've done twice.
In some ways, that's true.
Yeah. It is this, you know, it's some of the also described as this parade. Holden is this parade. And, you know, you kind of jump into the parade, you know, and whither it goes, as we say in the prayer, we do not know. No. But, you know, and then people jump in, people jump out. That's kind of the nature, the joy and the frustration of the place. Yeah, that's what it is.
But I think Dan is right that one of our tasks, and Thomas talked about it, I mean, in the 60s and 70s, you know, if the kitchen was having a full day, sessions were moved up to the dining room so that the kitchen could be part of the conversation. Something that was started in the 70s, which was Solitude Day, where the village stopped for a day. But that's what people look forward to now, just to have everything stop. But to be filled up, as those of us were who were privileged to be at the Ark today, it was one of those times I felt like, you know, thy kingdom come. Oh, it's here! You know, this is a foretaste of the feast. And it's here now, you know. You know, it was within us. It was preached into us by Karen and Jan. And you know, I couldn't get over it. It was
form a committee to work on this.
That's maybe very Thank you, Scott. I think the good thing with the shoeless Scott back there is to always remind me that, you know, barefoot people don't need committees.
And shoeless Scott.
Shoeless Joe, maybe.
Right, shoeless Joe is going to be. Is that
are we going to have a bedtime story soon?
Bedtime yeah,
story?
At 10 o'clock.
At 10, okay, so we have a few minutes.
And you're going to read Shoeless Joe?
No, it's a story by the same writer.
Okay, all right.
We've got some more questions for us.
Before.
Is there any video or DVD or anything that Holden has put together that could be shared with congregations? Where we are, if we had not gone to the website, it's wonderful.
Yeah.
And that's where we got our information, but we don't get information on Holden.
That's a good question. I really don't know. Maybe you know.
I do know that the orientation video is available. It's in the bookstore, and I think I can get a copy for you. If that, it doesn't give a whole lot.
There isn't a lot right now.
It's something that we probably need to work on.
We do.
We definitely do.
Because what the orientation, have you seen the orientation?
No.
So
then,
okay.
Oh,
so,
yeah, we did.
Okay.
Yeah.
But
it's
basically,
pretty basic.
It's pretty basic. What that says, it says very well at the beginning, this is a Christ-centered community. Then it does what an orientation video has to do. Don't fall into the ditch, you know, don't, you know, go camping by yourself. Basically the rules of, you know, getting along and, you know, where things are, and this is the bell. But nothing to my knowledge, I can ask Diane. There used to be a film called Hold of It years ago. And I don't know if there is something, because there should be, something that really tries and it tells the story, some history. This was God's gift, you know, to the church. And as with all gifts, you know, it's because of that, by its very nature, special. This unearned present that needs to be, you know, tended and passed along, you know. Something like that would be a great thing. Because usually in a congregation, it's always one person. You know, it's going to say, oh, I went out there, I had such a good time. You know, you'd love it. We knew the same thing in our restaurant. We never advertised at all the Harbor View Cafe, ever. Everything that happened there in terms of the public happened by word of mouth. Because we knew that, you know, the people who like you are going to know other people who might, you know, like you. No place is everybody's kind of place. And Holden isn't going to be everybody's kind of place either. No, that's never going to happen. It's not heaven. That's another place.
I think that has always been a Holden being heaven, or you know, when Peter wants to build little booths at the Mountain of Transfiguration. It's really hard to leave Holden. You folks next door, Diane's been here for 5 years, Alyssa's been here for three or four, you know, it's really hard to leave. And one of the dangers of Holden is that you can make it into an idol, so that it's Holden, therefore it should keep on, because it's Holden. If Holden isn't preaching the gospel to a world that's broken and that desperately needs to hear it, then Holden probably should not continue.
Yeah, should not.
And I think that's the precariousness that isn't just in, it just isn't nature, forest fire, avalanche. But if there isn't this just gladsome will to do that, I think if Holden becomes a chore for people, either to work at or to come to, I think then I don't think we'll be able to keep it going. It will not be sustained. And Hans Langmuir, this great lay theologian in Norway, used to say, and he spent 3.5 years in a German concentration camp, but he used to say what Jesus uses in one generation, Satan uses in the next, you know. And he was talking about things like the great outdoor movement of the northern countries, especially after World War I, where people went really back to nature, let's do something because industrialism has done all this. And the people used that to the greatest effect for the Nazis. Yeah. They were able to use this, you know, wonderful back to nature movement to be this frische Luft, and you know, the German people are not a city people, we're from the forest and the mountains, and we'll conquer the world with that. I think that Holden could become that, where it just becomes an idol. And then this shell, and everybody knows churches like that, you know, beautiful Victorian edifices that, what are they doing now? They lost their mission and they lost their joy.
And the other danger is that, you know, the place becoming just a venue.
Yeah.
You know, where you have, I mean, the mountains aren't going away, you know, until Jesus comes again. I mean, they're going to be there, they're going to be pretty, that's nice. There's the forest, that's nice. The buildings are attractive. This wouldn't be the first institution that just became a place where people bring their program. I mean, there's a certain amount of that already, there always has been, and I think that's healthy. But the place itself has no identity. Then you have trouble. Then you are a venue. Then you are no different than, let's say, a really nice concert hall that brings in shows. What Holden has always tried to lay claim to and to cling to through all of its history is this idea of a community. As it is constantly looking at that word and turning it over and redefining it and running it through, you know, people's minds. What does that mean to be the body of Christ? What does that mean? I think all healthy congregations or retreat centers are never let go of asking that question.
And Holden is a community that is, it goes outward from this place into space and time, and I think that's one of the most blessed things about it. We have any more questions? Or we've been at almost an hour, and thank you for waiting.
Yes, thank you for your patience.
And give us your book recommendations and movie recommendations too, because we will be watching movies as a community. Yeah. And your ideas and your joys and sorrows and your complaints and please keep us thoughts and prayers.
Just to put the amen on that, you know, since I've been here a week, a number of you in this room right now have come up to me with very practical, you know, I think this is a problem here. kind of thing. I love that. Do that. You know, if there is something that is annoying you or that you want to celebrate or whatever, but there's been more than one, and a lot of the ideas are just highly practical. You know, and I when somebody says them to me, I think, you know, they're right. You know, sometimes I don't agree. Other times I'm thinking, you know, that could be easily fixed and I didn't even look at it. Know what I mean? I mean, you all perceive the place as members of the community in different ways. And I, you know, none of the three of us can't, you know. I mean, we weren't hired because we're omniscient.
No.
I don't think anyone is under any illusion.
No, I think we're destroyed.
Well, thank you for coming.
Thank you very much. Yeah, thanks for staying up.